What's going on, everyone? Welcome to a special mailbag edition of Guest Friday. Great to be back with you folks on this Friday morning. Good to get to some questions here for Summer 2025 mailbag. Got quite a slew of questions from a number of listeners, a number of friends of the program as well. So looking forward to all these questions kind of all over the map. It seems like, we got some Celtics, some Patriots, a couple Red Sox. There's some Bruins too, as well as the Bruins have, made the announcement that Marco Sturm will be the new head coach. So we got some questions about that. So looking forward to that. Before we get going, you can always listen to the program on Apple Podcasts. And on Spotify, you can also follow along on Facebook and Twitter for the latest social updates. I want to say thanks to everyone that submitted questions for this week's mailbag. So I think we're gonna jump right into it, and I'm gonna jump right into it. Not gonna pull any punches. We're starting with the Red Sox here. So I got a question from Ryan McNeil, friend of the program, and his question a little colorful here, but his question is, what the fuck is wrong with the Red Sox? So, obviously, there's probably a lot, Ryan. I think, as I've kind of talked about at length for the last couple of weeks, it seems like there's just a combination of issues, and it's kind of like the same things over and over, it kind of seems like. And this is a team that's mired at 30 and 34 on the season, 64 games in. It's now kind of no longer a time where you can say, oh, it's early. It's kind of like this team has been established as what they are, and it's kind of a, underachieving, poorly disciplined baseball team is kind of what I look at this team as. And unfortunately, I don't want to play this card, but I do feel like there have been some injuries that have kind of affected this team in the early part of the season. And obviously, at the current moment, I have their best player, Alex Bregman, out and injured for probably the next couple of weeks, I would think. And it just is like more of the same. I think that there's not enough consistent starting pitching. Outside of Garrett Crochet, you're not getting any starter that's really consistently pitching deep into games. Brian Bello, I think, continues to have troubles with consistency. Giolito, you really don't know what pitcher you're going to get from start to start. I think he could pitch 5 innings, decently against, Atlanta last week, and then he gives up 7 runs in his last start, and it's like the Red Sox were, lucky to win that game on Wednesday, in which he pitched. And it's just like Buehler has had some decent starts, has had some bad starts, but it's just like they can't consistently get deep into games. The lineup is, kind of all over the place, it seems like. Guys, moving from position to position, it doesn't really seem like there's a set, lineup for this team. It seems like it changes every day. And obviously, like, they've had to move stuff around thanks to the injuries and kind of just the shuffle at first base. But it's not consistent enough. You have guys that are struggling very much, and then you have some guys that are hitting fine. It just, defensively, it's not good enough, and it's kind of been that way for the last couple of years. So it's kind of like it's a combination of a lot of things. And I think just, and maybe, who knows, maybe it's problematic that there were expectations for this team to start the season, and it's like, maybe that just was too much. But again, it still is kind of strange that you've looked at the three offseason acquisitions that were major: Chapman, Crochet, and Bregman, and they've all been excellent when they played. So it's like, I don't know. It's not one answer, unfortunately, Ryan. It's kind of just a combination of things. So, next question from Sam Brown, another friend of the program. He wants to know, what did the Celtics do this summer to retool? So, Sam, I think it's a complicated answer, because I think when you say the word retool, I don't know if that means, are they retooling to try to get back into contention as soon as they can? Or does this mean that, like, they are going to try to be a little bit more conservative and kind of take this season as like, okay, we're going to take this season to develop some of our younger guys, develop larger roles for, somebody like Peyton Pritchard or, Baylor Shireman. It's kind of difficult because I feel like there's not like one definite path that they're gonna take. So I feel like if they're gonna try to be a contending team, that they're going to try to make some kind of trade that, gives them a couple players that can help kind of push them forward, and whether that's getting some front court help, getting some, wing depth, because gonna be without Jason, they're gonna be without Jaylen Brown, presumably for parts of the season. So it's like, unfortunately, there's not a whole lot that they can do. I feel like, it's kind of they're limited because of the second apron stuff. But I feel like, if they were to trade Jrue Holiday, for example, could they get some pieces back in a potential deal? With Porzingis, I don't feel like they have the ability to. That I feel like they're going to trade him. They move him to somewhere like Brooklyn, where, the Celtics could get under that, second apron. I feel like it's going to be a lot of kind of finding maybe some guys in the draft. Do they try to move up in the draft? I think that that's very possible with the 28th and 32nd overall pick. Do they try to move up a little bit more to try to get a player that can help them right away? It's a lot of up in the air stuff, but I feel like their options are, fairly limited, and it's kind of just like you have to see what you can get from some of the guys that are going to be on your roster to start next season. Presumably Pritchard, presumably Shireman, and Keita, and Jordan Walsh, whatever guys you pick in the draft. Derek White, presumably. So, I think it's gonna be interesting for sure. Cornette, I would be thinking that he comes back. Horford, kind of don't know. And then obviously it'd be interesting to see, Jaylen Brown. Does he decide to get surgery? Is he out for a period of time to start the season? I think that that's kind of gonna be interesting to see. But I feel like I didn't expect that they're gonna do anything crazy. I don't think that they're gonna make like a big trade. I think that presently constituted with some moves here and there, Celtics could challenge to be a play-in team, maybe a top six seed in the East, but I feel like the options are kind of limited a little bit at the moment. But there's certainly a lot of options that, a lot of different directions they could go. Next question here from my dad. He wants to know, would the Celtics have beaten the Pacers? So, I think for me, I would say the easy answer is no. And I'm going with this answer because I'm going to assume that, if, say, the Celtics had come back to beat the Knicks, they obviously do that without Jason Tatum. I don't think they're beating the Pacers without Jason Tatum. And maybe this is crazy to say, even if the Celtics were fully healthy, or, like, don't say fully healthy, but like relatively healthy, the way that they were before Tatum gets hurt, Porzingis dealing with what he's dealing with, I still don't think they beat the Pacers. I know that might sound crazy, but I just feel like you've seen the way the Pacers play in these close games in the playoffs. The Celtics, I don't know, like I feel like in the playoffs they kind of had some issues in those close games down the stretch, and I just feel like you look at the way Haliburton and the Pacers have won these games where they're down, 6, 7, 8 points in the last 45 seconds, and they win. And it's kind of like, I don't know if I'd be as confident with the Celtics in those situations. So I feel like, if Tatum doesn't tear his Achilles, Celtics come back to beat the Knicks. I don't know if they beat the Pacers. I really don't. I just feel like that's a Pacers team that's very determined and very, like, would be very, pumped up to play the Celtics again. But I think Tatum getting hurt, if the Celtics had somehow, come back and beaten the Knicks, I don't think they beat the Pacers. I don't even think they come close, to be perfectly honest. Like, I think they lose in five games to Indiana, if they're going into that series without Tatum, with Porzingis kind of being limited as he was. So I think that that's probably what I would say with that question. Next from my younger brother, he wants to know, while everyone is concerned about who the Celtics will potentially trade away this offseason, who are potential targets that the Celtics should slash will trade for? So again, I feel like the Celtics are, fairly limited in terms of what they can do. But I feel like there was something that I'd seen about a potential Jrue Holiday trade to Dallas a couple weeks ago. And in that scenario, it was the Celtics bringing in somebody like Daniel Gafford, who's a big, a guy who can rebound, is solid defensively. And I feel like that's somebody the Celtics could look at for sure, because I feel like the front court depth, not sure where that's going to be, because I don't think Porzingis is going to be on this team to start next season. Horford, you kind of go either way about whether he retires or goes somewhere else. Cornette as well. I think with the way that he played this season, has he played himself out of Boston? And so I feel like somebody like Gafford would make a lot of sense. I think somebody kind of with that similar type of game, because I think they're going to need, front court depth. I think, in the draft, they probably look at some wing guys, guys who can score, guys that can, give them the ability for guys to kind of go get buckets and go score, because obviously they're going to be without Tatum next season, I would assume. Jaylen Brown probably for a portion of the season as well. So it's like they could get somebody in the draft that, can kind of come in and, average close to 15, 20 a game. And so that's kind of why I feel like they could use the picks that they have to trade up for somebody earlier in the draft, or trade up for somebody in the draft. So I feel like I don't know if I would have specific players that the Celtics could get, because I feel like they are kind of limited in what they can do, but I feel like definitely somebody that could help with their, front court depth, I would say. Because I think the chances are they could be pretty thin in that area. So I feel like they could look in the draft for somebody like that, but also look for somebody that can score as well. I think, Brad Stevens is going to have to be pretty shrewd this offseason in terms of making some moves so that the team is, best set up to be as successful as they can be next season. So next, we have a slew of Patriot questions from Ben Baptiste, a friend of the program. So his first question, will the off-field concerns play an impact on Diggs prior to the season starting? So, obviously we've talked about the situation with Stephon Diggs. Good news is he was back at OTAs earlier this week, so I think that's at least a good sign that, the focus is where it needs to be. So I think, Ben, in answer to your question, I think at this point it won't. I think that, whatever went down, in the last week or so, it's probably going to be it for what happens off the field, we would hope. I feel like it should be a guy that you can be confident in, that he comes in focused and kind of ready to contribute. So I feel like I'm not as concerned about that. I feel like if he didn't come back to, OTAs last week, probably be a little bit kind of not sure. But I feel like the fact that he's back, and I think working his way back, I think makes me feel a little bit more confident. So Ben's next question, with the heavy focus on defensive additions this offseason, do we think the Patriots defense will place in the top tier of the league? So Ben, I would say yes, honestly, but I don't think it actually has a lot to do with the offseason acquisitions. I would say it has a lot to do with Christian Barmore and his return to the field, being healthy and being cleared. And I think that, like, he's a guy that's going to make a huge difference in terms of, this defense being a top unit. I do think they could be a top 10 unit in the league this season. Now, I'm not trying to say that the off-season acquisitions have nothing to do with what I think you're going to see improvement in, because I think they brought in some really good players. But I do think it's the returning guys, to me, that I think are going to make the biggest difference, in terms of Barmore, Keon White, Christian Gonzalez, Jabril Peppers, some of the guys that are still here. But I do think that it's going to be a very, very good defense that I think will keep this team in a lot of games. They have an easier schedule this year, so I feel like this is a defense that really could be very, very strong, potentially top 10 in the league. So Ben's next question, how do you believe the Patriots' backfield will look week one? So Patriots play the Raiders week one. It's obviously Josh McDaniels' old team. I feel like you are going to see the Patriots use a bunch of different guys in that backfield. I do think that Landlarison, the undrafted rookie, I think makes the team. I think Stevenson obviously will get some decent workload. I think Gibson as well. Henderson, kind of not sure about him early on in the season, but I feel like he's a guy that could definitely, end up being huge to the team's success this season. So I feel like at week one, I think it will be Stevenson probably starting the game, but I think those other three guys, you're absolutely going to see getting some type of, playing time and hopefully production. So that's kind of what I see week one. Ben's last question, any chance Henderson bumps Stevenson out of the running back one spot or potentially splits reps? So this is an interesting question because I kind of feel like by the end of the season, there's a chance that both of those guys are kind of splitting reps. Don't think Henderson becomes like that top running back, but I do feel like both of those guys could seriously be, as close in production as, and it might shock some people. I really wouldn't be surprised if Henderson is more yards per carry than Stevenson. I think just with his speed and his big playability, but that's certainly something interesting to watch this season. So definitely looking forward to that. So some great Patriot questions here. So next question, going a little bit off the board. Emily Melville wants to know, which professional sports player would you like to see on Survivor one day? So actually, I did one better here. So I thought of a couple of Boston athletes that I think would do really, really well in Survivor. First one is retired Celtics player Kevin Garnett. I think he would do well on Survivor. I think just the legendary intensity that he has, I think would bode really well for him. I think he'd do really well in physical challenges, of course. He just, to me, is hilarious too, so I feel like would get great entertainment value as well. So I feel like that's my answer. Current athlete, I think Tristan Casas playing Survivor would be pretty wild. He's a pretty eccentric guy, kind of an out there personality that, I think not really, like most people don't really understand him. And I feel like that might be good in terms of like strategically that he might do well in the game. He's also physically a big dude, so I feel like him doing well in immunity challenges would definitely happen. But also I think just again would be an entertaining player to watch Survivor. So great question there. So next question, we got a question from Connor Ward, and he wants to know, Angel Reese versus Caitlin Clark, who do you support and why? Okay, so again, kind of a wild question here, but I don't know. I feel like I'm gonna take the easy way out. I'm not gonna say that I like one player over the other. I feel like, the rivalry between the two, as I've kind of talked about before, I think is great for the sport, and I think it's, something that makes the game interesting. Obviously, when the two teams battle, Chicago and Indiana. So I feel like it's definitely a good rivalry for the sport. I'm not going to be out here picking sides, really. I just feel like they're both, great ambassadors for the sport, and I think, for everybody to support both of them is really what should be happening. I think any kind of rivalry is good for any kind of sport because I think it makes it inherently makes it more interesting. So, I think kind of a question that I think I'm not usually used to answering, but great question nonetheless, Connor. So now we got a couple of questions from friend of the program, Derek Welch. He's been on a couple times talking, I think, Patriots and Celtics. So he has a bunch of questions. So first, his Patriots question, outside of Diggs, who do you think has the best chance to break out of the wide receiver room? So I think there are a lot of possible answers here. I really like what I've kind of seen and heard about Kyle Williams, the Patriots' third round pick out of Washington State. I feel like he's a player that really could make a difference right away. I think, out of all the options that they have, I think he's the guy that I'm most excited about and curious about, breaking out. I feel like having that early connection with Drake May and the OTAs, I think is a good sign. And I feel like it's going to be interesting to see, do the Patriots try to make him, a focal point. I feel like they kept trying to do that with Jalen Polk last year, and obviously the results weren't great, but I do think that, they may try to get another young receiver kind of going early. So I feel like Williams kind of has the best chance to break out. Derek's Red Sox question. What's your opinion on why this team cannot win, stay above 500? Well, Derek, it's kind of going back to our first question. It just seems like all the different areas of this team that, need to be sound, aren't. Talk about the starting pitching, you talk about the defense and the errors, but it's like you also talk about the blown saves, the Red Sox inability to win in one-run games, the inability to win in those kind of extra inning games that really come down to kind of one play or two plays, and the Red Sox just, aren't doing enough in those types of games. They're not hitting with runners in scoring position in those types of games. And I think one way you could look at it is that the Red Sox just, don't play well in those one-run games. I guess the other thing you could look at is, okay, they're in a lot of these games, and it's just a matter of, flipping those things. And instead of, hitting like, as I read in the paper, hitting like 155 in with runners in scoring position in one run games, if you flip that, then you start getting hits in those types of games in those situations, does it kind of change? But I just feel like, again, it's kind of, as I've talked about, there's kind of a lack of depth, it seems like, and I feel like I'm not really sure why that is, and I feel like, it's the Red Sox kind of hoping that certain young guys kind of just figure it out. And it just doesn't seem like there's too much of a backup plan. And it just seems like, I don't know, I feel like there's this element of being too comfortable. And I kind of feel like I get that kind of sense from Alex Cora at times. And I understand that, he tries to do his best to get the most out of this team, but I just feel like sometimes there's not the level of urgency that there needs to be. And it's almost like a, oh, it's still early, and it's not. You've played 64 games. You're 4 games under 500, and it's kind of like, I don't know where the level of urgency is. So, I don't know if that's a good enough answer there. Derek's other question for the Red Sox is, would you trade Jarren Duran to free up an outfield spot? Personally, I'd think about it. I think with the Red Sox, I mean, I don't even really know what to say in terms of the Roman Anthony stuff, that it's like, it's been time to call him up, and I feel like it almost would make sense to trade somebody like Duran, who I think has a lot of trade value. I also think Willy Abreu does as well. And I just feel like, I don't know if they're going to refuse to, move Seydon Rafaela, then it's just like, fine, it's going to be one of those corner outfield guys that maybe they move in a trade. And obviously, I've been pretty hard on Rafaela, and course, he homers in three straight games this week. So, obviously that doesn't make me look great, but I feel like you almost would have to entertain it at this point. I feel like I like Durant. Obviously, I do, and I really like him as a player, and I think that he's, grown a lot as a person here, and I think it's been a great story, but it just, I don't know, it may be time for the Red Sox to consider something like that, I think, especially if we're getting closer to the trade deadline and the Red Sox are, getting further and further out of it, you consider to do that. So Derek's next question, Bruins question, overall thoughts in bringing in Marco Sturm. So obviously Bruins make it official yesterday, hiring Marco Sturm to be their new head coach. And I think for me, I think it's a good choice. I think it's a smart choice. I think it's somebody that I think you're taking a little bit of a risk because he's never coached in the NHL before, or been a head coach, I should say. I'd been an assistant with the Kings, has been their head coach, has been the head coach for their AHL affiliate the last two seasons. I think is a guy that has enough experience with the modern NHL, but obviously hasn't been head coach. But I feel like I kind of like that. I feel like they're, taking a chance here and not going the route of hiring a retread like Mike Sullivan, Peter Laviolette, guys that have been around forever. And obviously, you could say maybe you'd prefer somebody like that who has experience, but I just feel like taking a chance on somebody a little bit new makes a lot of sense. And I do feel like, Sturm's going to try to get this team back to kind of being more of a defensively structured team, which I think makes sense because that's, I think, the strength that you have on your team as currently constituted. I think with McAvoy, Lindholm, Zadorov, and those guys that you have back there, and Swayman with the goaltending. So I feel like I like it from that perspective. I do also like that he has a good relationship with some young players. And you look at the Kings organization, you look at their NHL roster right now, they have a number of young players that have come up through the system and, this season in particular have performed well and had good production. So, I think I'm excited about that sort of thing. But then again, this is what was said about Bruce Cassidy and Jim Montgomery when they got hired, that they're going to work better with the younger players. Obviously, it kind of like Bruce Cassidy kind of wore out his welcome, I guess, and then I think Montgomery maybe wasn't hard enough. I don't know. But it's like you would hope that there's, working with the younger players does, yield some results that they can get some of those guys to start producing, bringing those guys up from Providence and, helping them assimilate to the NHL game, which obviously the Bruins haven't been able to do super well in the last number of years. So, kind of curious to see what happens there. Derek has a couple of Celtics questions here. Who do you think is safe next year? Who are you comfortable moving? So, I think obviously Jason Tatum is safe. He's not going anywhere. Jaylen Brown, I don't think is going anywhere either. That's just kind of what I feel. Derek White, I think it's been rumored that there have been teams that have checked in on Derek White, and the Celtics have rebuffed all those teams, so it doesn't seem like they're interested in moving him either. I would say those three guys are safe, but I think everybody else is, kind of on the table. In theory, I'm comfortable moving anybody else. I don't think that they're going to move Pritchard. I don't think that they'd move. I feel like I'm forgetting someone. I'm not sure why. Maybe it was just Pritchard, but I think anybody else could be on the table to get moved. And honestly, I'm fine with, any of those guys getting moved. Whether it's Holiday, Porzingis, Sam Hauser, I think those would be the most likely players to get moved. But I think, outside of the three of Tatum, White, and Brown, I don't think that I'm, or I think I would want to keep those three and would be comfortable moving any of the other players. Derek's last question, why does JB not get as much respect as he deserves? I see him in comparisons with Devin Booker all the time. So, I want to be careful with what I say because obviously we're a Boston-based podcast, so I feel like maybe this comes off a certain way, but I do kind of feel like sometimes in the national media there can be a Boston bias. Not really sure why. It's kind of the same reason why I think sometimes Tatum doesn't get the respect that he deserves. I really don't know what the answer is really. I think that Jaylen has had tremendous success in this league. Finals MVP, Eastern Conference Finals MVP, like it's been all NBA. I don't know. It just is, I think that they're both kind of equally good players, him and Booker. Booker has one finals appearance. Jaylen's been to the finals twice. I really don't know, what the answer is because I feel like they're both kind of, equally as good players. Like I wouldn't say that one is significantly better than the other, kind of pretty even. So, I don't know. Maybe the comparisons are, fair. I do happen to think that Jaylen's a better player, just kind of his all-around game. Booker, I feel like, as good as he is offensively, does he often take the challenges of defending the other team's best player? I've not seen enough. Maybe I've not seen enough Phoenix Suns games, but I don't feel like that's the case. I feel like Jaylen kind of makes efforts to guard, those really good players. You think about Luka in the finals last year, and you think about different players, really good players that he has guarded as well. And I feel like Timmons' defensive game maybe doesn't get as much, attention as his offensive game. I think Booker's probably a better shooter. Maybe he's a better scorer, but I feel like, Jaylen's got that better all-around game. So I feel like, in terms of why he doesn't get respect, I feel like the Boston thing has a lot to do with it. Otherwise, I'm kind of not really sure. But good slew of questions from Tarek there. Got a couple of questions from my good friend Matt Frechette. He asked a bunch of Patriot questions. We'll get into some here. So Matt wants to know, will Bill Belichick coach in the NFL again? My gut says no. I think that he is done with the coaching in the NFL. I think that, this opportunity in college will probably be what he does for the rest of his career. I don't really see a move back. Is it possible? Of course. I think that definitely there will be teams out there that maybe get desperate at some point, fire their coach. I think especially a team that's like close to winning a Super Bowl. So, maybe a team like Buffalo. I kind of thought a team like Philadelphia, potentially if they didn't win the Super Bowl last year, I feel like, I don't know, maybe a Cincinnati, who knows, but it's like, I would be surprised if he coaches in the NFL again. That's just kind of what my gut tells me. So Matt's next question, will the Patriots win 10 games? So obviously, on this podcast, I am pretty, optimistic, I think typically, about our local teams. And I feel like, I've talked positively at times about the Patriots at certain points when maybe I thought that they were, better than they were. I don't think they win 10 games this year. My guess is they win 8 games or 9 games. I think that's kind of what my expectation is at this point. But, you've seen in the NFL over the last number of years, teams that can turn it around very quickly. And I think, with the offseason acquisitions that the Patriots, made, with the schedule being kind of easier, I think it is a possibility that they could win double-digit games. I don't think they're going to do that. I think best case scenario, they win 9 games and get to the playoffs as maybe the 7 seed, but you know, I'm going to say no, they don't win 10 games, but fingers crossed that I'm wrong. So Matt's next question, top receiver and rusher this season. So I think as much as I really like Kyle Williams and I think that he'll do well this season, I do think Stephon Diggs will be the Patriots' top receiver. He'll be healthy. You know, I think we'll be kind of that go-to guy for Drake May. He's not going to be the guy that he was 4 years ago, but I think he's still going to be a top target. Now, the only caveat here is if he starts the season on the PUP list and misses the first 6 games of the season, I think there's a possibility that, you know, Hunter Henry could be that top receiver again in terms of yards and receptions. But I do feel like it's going to be Diggs, and I feel like he's going to be healthy week one and is going to be the Patriots' top receiver. Top rusher this season. You know what? I initially thought when I was going to start, when I, you know, started recording this, that Stevenson was going to be my answer. I think Travion Henderson is going to be the leading rusher for the Patriots this season. He, I think, just barely, you know, gets more yards than Stevenson does. So I feel like Henderson will be the top rusher in terms of yards this season. Matt's next question, what are the odds of Vrabel wins Coach of the Year? Well, Matt, I think the odds are really, really good. I don't know, you know, what the Vegas odds are necessarily, but you got to think that he's going to be, you know, I mean, I don't know. In my opinion, I think he's the favorite, to be perfectly honest, because I think that this is a team that's going to win easily 8 games. And I think just doing enough of that, I think he'll be good enough to win that Coach of the Year. You know, not really sure about the other coaches, but I feel like the odds for him should be really, really good that he wins that at the end of the year. So Matt's next question is the Celtics one. Will Jason Tatum be back by the end of the season if they are in the playoffs? So this is a good question. I kind of talked about this a couple weeks ago when we were talking about, you know, Jason's recovery from the Achilles and, you know, how much he just loves to play basketball and how much I think he is going to push himself. You know, do I think he's back by that point? No. But I feel like he's going to try to push himself to try to be available for that. And I'll be honest, that doesn't, I don't feel great about that. You know, I know that he's a determined guy and loves to play, but I just feel like they should be clear with him that he absolutely, you know, should not be playing at all next season. You know, unless we're talking about a miraculous recovery and he is like very clearly going to be back to being himself. I don't know how you tell that, but I don't think that he comes back. I think it's just going to be kind of a full season that he's just, you know, recovering, resting, and doing the best he can so that he's, you know, ready to go for 26, 27. So, to answer your question, no, I don't think so. I got a couple of questions from my older brother, Tyler, friend of the program. So he wants to know what changes will the new Bruins coach make? So I think, you know, as you kind of talked about it a little bit earlier, I think Marco Sturm is going to try to get them back to being kind of a defense first kind of team, and kind of building that, you know, foundation of strong defense. And, you know, I don't know this for sure, but I do feel like the Bruins are going to be prioritizing getting pucks and bodies to the net offensively, that I think they're not going to worry about kind of quality of shots as much, that they kind of need to be a team that just throws the puck on goal. I feel like that's kind of what works in the playoffs. And I also feel like if they're going to be a structured defensive team, that's kind of going to be what the focus should be. I think in terms of, you know, the stuff about the young players, I think, you know, looking at the Kings and some of the players that, you know, performed well for them last season, a lot of them are younger players. You know, you look at somebody like Quinton Byfield, who was the number 2 overall pick in 2020. is kind of like their top young player. But you look at some of the other, young defensemen that they have. Brant Clark, who's 21, was the 8th overall pick in 2021, played 78 games at 33 points. Jordan Spence, 23 years old, a defenseman, played 79 games at 28 points. Mikey Anderson, who's also a defenseman, 25 years old, played 77 games, had 24 points. All three of those guys played kind of major roles for the Kings this season. And then you look at some forwards, Alex Laferriere, 23 years old, right wing, had 42 points this season in 77 games. Alex Turcotte, young center, played 68 games, 25 points. So I feel like that's kind of what I'm hoping could be kind of a change for the Bruins, that they, give those opportunities to younger players to see what they can do and, assimilate them with the established talent that they have, which is kind of what the Kings did. I think you look at the great, stars that they already have in Kopitar and Kempe and Kevin Fiala, they've been able to, be a contending team, but also be able to kind of bring along that young talent. And I feel like, it's not going to be that the Bruins are going to be able to, get those types of players, but I feel like with Marco Sturm, I feel like with that Kings system, they're going to try to do things kind of like that, where, they're able to count on their established talent, but then also to kind of bring players along as well. Drew Doughty is also still there as a older veteran as well. So I feel like, that's kind of what they could try to do differently or differently than they have done in the past. I feel like it's still kind of a organizational thing that they need to improve upon to kind of really be willing to let those younger guys kind of get an opportunity. So it'll be interesting to see, but I do think that, I do like the hire. So Tyler's next question, where do the Celtics go from here? So kind of took that in terms of a longer view, in terms of not necessarily next season, but I think, for them, I think keeping Tatum and Brown together, I still think that that should be one of your goals, and obviously, are they going to be able to compete for a title next season? No, I don't expect that. And so I feel like what they, will try to do, depending on what they do in the offseason, is try to develop some of those younger guys and, kind of give them an opportunity to have a larger opportunity than they normally would, if Jason was healthy. And I feel like it's kind of getting those guys ready for, okay, once Jason and Jalen are, fully back at 100%, are they going to be able to support them when this team, is trying to compete for titles? I feel like I'd like to keep Derek White around, would like to keep Pritchard around. But obviously, I think with the way that they kind of went all in, kind of can't keep Porzingis and Holiday. But I think, sure, is next season going to be a little bit different? Are they going to struggle to get, to the play-in? Probably. But I feel like it's not going to be something that's going to be forever. I know that there's maybe some concerns with how Jason comes back from the Achilles. Maybe I'm assuming that he's going to be back to being his usual self. I kind of think he will. It's kind of just the suspicion that I have. But I feel like they're best served to keep Jalen and Jason together, and kind of see what they can do. I understand that there's, business and money decisions that they have to make, but I feel like they should be making every effort they can to keep those two guys together in Boston for as long as they possibly can. So next question here from my sister-in-law, Michaela. She wants to know if you could make one change, coach or player, to each Boston team, what would it be and why? So this is quite a question. So I'm going to start with the Revolution. I've been pleased with their 9-game unbeaten streak this season. I would say that, and this, realistic or not, it's kind of just what I feel like they could use. Adam Buksa is a guy that played for the Revolution a couple of years back, had 15 or 16 goals in a season. Was really, really good in the air, and I feel like the Revolution had a player like that that was really good on headers and could score, really from anywhere. I feel like it would help them out quite a bit, and I think like they had a guy like that, I think they'd be near the top of the MLS standings. I feel like they get by fine, but I feel like they had somebody like that that could be someone that you could count on for, a goal close to, every 3 games or so. I feel like it would make a huge difference. So that would be my answer for the Revolution, just to find somebody else that could consistently score goals. And I think that they're getting by okay right now, but I feel like, he would make a crazy difference. I think for the Red Sox, easy answer here, Roman Anthony. I think he needs to be with the Red Sox, and I think he gives them the best chance to be good and competitive. Now, obviously, you don't know for sure a guy coming up to the majors from the minors. Sometimes the assimilation is not perfect, but I just feel like the way that he's just been dominating, I think it's like there's no reason to not see if he can make a difference. And I just feel like this team needs a shot in the arm desperately, and I feel like he would be like the easiest, most the answer that would make the most sense, outside of like some fantasy land answer where like, oh, I'd like Shohei Ohtani to be on the Red Sox. Of course that's the easy answer, but I feel like, Roman Anthony, I think, would be the guy that could make a huge difference for this Red Sox team at the current moment. For the Bruins, again, probably not realistic. Mitch Marner, I would love to see him with the Bruins. I think that he could be a guy that would make David Pastrnak's life easier, be another guy that can have the potential to score 100 points in a season. Sure, okay, everybody's going to say what they're going to say about his inability to perform in the playoffs with Toronto, but I don't know. I just feel like playing in that market, it's not, I don't know. I don't know if we really have a fair idea of, him as a player. I feel like if he was playing here in Boston, it might be a little bit different, may not be as crazy in terms of the media market. I mean, I could be wrong, but I just feel like, man, if the Bruins could get another, star player like that, it would just would make everything so much easier. And I think if the Bruins could make that kind of addition, it like instantly makes them a team that could be considered, top team in the East. I don't know if it's realistic this offseason if they could get him because he's a free agent, but man, if there's no such thing as salary cap and you could just add him on the Bruins, I would do that immediately. I think for the Patriots, I would say David Andrews. I know that he retired last week. Patriots have released him, but man, I would just love to have his, leadership with this team that I think is, going through some changes in terms of personnel. Just having him there, I think, would be huge. And it just, I think, could still be a help to their offensive line, even if maybe he's not starting or playing a lot of games. I feel like his leadership could definitely be useful. So that would be my answer for the Patriots. I think got that. I think for the Celtics, been watching obviously a lot of playoff basketball, been watching a lot of the Pacers. I feel like if the Celtics could get Pascal Siakam on the team, I feel like that would be a guy that I would really like to see, with the Celtics, just kind of selfishly. It's just the way that he plays, he can just get a bucket at literally any time. And I feel like for this Pacers team, when they do well in the playoffs, he always does well. And I feel like he's a type of player that like may not fit perfectly, but if you need a bucket, he'll get you a bucket and can be a guy that can score 25 to 30 pretty much any night. Has won a championship, has played in a lot of big games, and I feel like, I don't care how it would work stylistically. I just would love to see him on the Celtics. I think he could make a huge difference for this team, as a bucket getter, a guy that has experience and, sure, maybe isn't perfect defensively, but still would like to see him with the Celtics. So I think I got a couple of questions here from my mom, and then we'll be out of your hair. Her first question, will Giannis get traded this summer? If so, where? So kind of have been going back and forth on this because I feel like, kind of the current sentiment is it'll stay in Milwaukee and, wants to be there to try to build the team back up. I have a feeling that he is going to get moved this summer, and I feel like a team like Houston is going to make that kind of move that, they realize that they are, somewhat close with the, core of young players or players that they have. They have a really good head coach in Ime Udoka, and I feel like if they could get a superstar type player like a Giannis or a Kevin Durant, I really think it would elevate them to, being a serious contender in the West. Because I feel like as much as they were the second seed in this year's playoffs, they kind of were a little young, and I feel like the Warriors were able to take advantage of that in the first round. But I feel like if Giannis does get moved, that Houston team is going to be the most likely landing spot for him. Next question, which WNBA teams will be the strongest this season? So I think already you have the Liberty that have just been lights out to start the season. Minnesota as well. I think I expect both of those teams to kind of be near the top of the league standings. And then obviously Las Vegas with Asia Wilson, I think can't count them out either. So I feel like those three teams probably are going to be the best. The most and strongest and most likely to, get the title, whether it's the Liberty winning back to back or Minnesota or Vegas, getting the title. So last question here, is there enough mental health resources for athletes? So obviously this is a question that I've thought about quite a bit that I feel like at this point in time, you would like to think that there probably are, more resources than there were 20, 25 years ago. And I feel like the sports world has come a long way in that kind of in that realm. And I think getting the support for athletes is really, really important because at the end of the day, athletes are, just like us. They just happen to be really good at a craft. And I think sometimes it's easy to forget that they're just, normal human beings just like us. And I feel like, sometimes, not that the, I feel like sometimes, like, the fan stuff can kind of go a little bit too far when, there's criticism of players online and things like that. And it can, really, really affect, an athlete's mental health and well-being. I mean, seen so many stories of, athletes being willing to open up. But I think like the crazy thing is like not everybody is comfortable with that. And I feel like making sure that there are enough resources is really, really important. And I just feel like this day and age, I think with social media and I think just now with the sports betting stuff, unfortunately, it's creating more of a situation where it's like there's more and more kind of more of a chance of things coming up that are kind of, hateful in terms of, people on social media sites going after athletes or, threatening their families and things like that. I mean, we've heard about this story with Lance McCullers, the Astros pitcher that had to hire, personal security because he and his family were being threatened by an online bettor. And it's just like, I don't know, at a certain point, like the sports betting stuff kind of feels like it's getting out of hand where it's like people bet and people gamble and that's fine. But it's just like when we're taking it to the point of threatening, athletes' lives and their families, it's like obviously we're taking it too far. And it's just like, I don't know how, athletes can be equipped to have to like think about dealing with stuff like that. It's like when you are working your way up to the major leagues or, the NBA, NHL, whatever league it is, you're so focused on, what it takes to be a pro. And it's like to have to think about being attacked on social media is just a thing that like somebody like me, I can't even imagine what that's like. And it's just, you got to hope that there are enough resources for players, but it's like the athletes this day and age, like it's insane the amount of stuff that they have to deal with, and it's probably not even close to what athletes even 20 years ago had to deal with, with the social media stuff and the online presence, where, this day and age, athletes are, just a tweet away and things like that. And it's just kind of crazy that it's gotten to this point where, it just is, mental health needs to be taken seriously. And I kind of feel that way, outside of sports. So it's a great question, obviously. Really was a question that made me think. Really appreciated all the questions this week. I think we got some great ones, some ones that were a little bit out of the box, which I appreciate. So I think that's probably going to do it for the mailbag. Obviously, thanks again to everybody that submitted questions, and we'll be back with you folks next week.